Welcome to Covenant Presbyterian Church in West Des Moines, Iowa. This educational offering is part of our mission to bless our neighbors to the glory of God. We hope it blesses you.
Welcome, everybody, to Contemporary Issues again this lovely fall evening as it's getting darker and darker outside. In our first of five Monday evenings, presented to you by the United Way. We're going to be doing the United Way 21-Day Equity Challenge. So we're going to start with just kind of some, logistics about that and make sure that everybody knows kind of what we're doing and how we're doing it and so forth. So the United Way is presenting this equity challenge, and I think it's, we could take their word for it, but I also think they're right that the United Way cares about equity and cares about those of us in the rest of the community knowing and caring about equity. Because as the sort of the United Way mission is, their mission is to create and implement initiatives focused on producing real results in the areas of education, income, and health. And if you care about real results, then you need to care about why real results might be harder to achieve depending on whom you're supporting, where you're supporting them. But the United Way of Des Moines did not invent the Equity Challenge. They actually are using this curriculum designed by Dr. Eddie Moore Jr. Dr. Moore is a trainer in diversity, privilege, and leadership. He is Iowa educated, so he has a bachelor's degree from Cornell College, a master's degree from Loras, and a PhD in education from the University of Iowa. So anywhere you would like a degree from on the eastern half of the state, he's got one. And he is now based in Green Bay, Wisconsin. And what we get with the 21-Day Equity Challenge is we get 21 days of content it includes articles to read, podcasts to listen to, videos to watch, and activities, ways to actually sort of put this into practice. Every day has its own topic. So throughout the curriculum, you're going to notice racial disparities kind of throughout as we talk about equity. And the topic of racism and systemic racism, that's going to be most explicit at the beginning in the kind of the first half. But again, you're going to kind of recognize the impact of racism in a structural way throughout the curriculum. So what you get is an email every morning with things to learn and actions to take. And so every day has its own topic, but you're going to kind of notice that the themes sort of, you can tell how we get from one theme to another. And then each week we're going to talk about the previous week's topics. We'll kind of pull something out. And so shoot me an email if you think that there's something in particular on one of the days that you hope we will talk about. Raise your hand if you have filled out the little form and signed up for the 21-Day Equity Challenge. A few of you have. Excellent. If you signed up, did you get the email as you expected it this morning? Deb did. Russ and Mary did not. You'll want to double check and see if that got stuck in your spam folder. And Sue and Anne, did you get the email this morning, or do you think yours might have ended up in spam too?
I have checked. I don't think I got it either place, but.
Well, I got a video. Should I have gotten a video? And it had, I mean, there was a multitude of things I could have looked at, read, or watched.
Yeah, then it sounds like you got it.
Okay, but that was when I signed up, then it was right there, and I did all those things.
Yeah, that's what with me.
There's the dog. You're going to have to protect me.
So the
Yeah,
email should look like this.
got that.
And there actually were two today. One went out with some broken links, and so they had to send a new one. So it looks like this 21-day equity challenge, understanding systemic racism in red. So what they've got is a survey to fill out, kind of to say, here's why I'm doing this, and here's what I'm interested in learning. Then a journal page for today to help kind of help you interact and respond. Some questions to think with. And I'm actually looking at this email for the first time right now because of what the rest of my day has looked like. So I'm learning right along with you. Questions to think with, and then activities. And they point out they are giving you way more content than you can deal with. So they know that. So the idea is that you're going to spend 10 to 15 minutes engaging with this. So that, or if there's something that you really want to learn more about, then obviously you can learn more.
He's going.
But we don't want anybody to feel like they need to be overwhelmed with the amount of content that's out there. Part of this is so that you know how much there is to learn.
I watched the video,
Okay, great.
the TED video.
The unpacking my baggage.
Yeah, I think, yeah, yes, I watched that.
Great.
I watched the two videos and I read that first article. And I looked at the
Excellent.
glossary, but there were like 100 terms, so I didn't read them all. Yeah, the
Right.
terms were that just was too much information to look through.
Too
Yeah, I
much to
watched
make it
the other
through.
TED one too.
Oh, good. So you got the unpacking my baggage and growing pains.
And the
That's
growing
terrific.
pains was a poem done by three high school kids.
Oh, neat.
That was neat.
So, and then we've got that journal page. I've got this discussion guide. And that discussion guide is really a framework for having conversations like this. So it's we need kind of the specific content from the various days.
Does
And then
anybody know the artist? Is that at the Art Center currently?
that's a great question. So it's the
It's
credit
looks like
is
it
Des Moines
says
Art Center
permanent
Permanent
collection.
Collections. Yeah.
Yeah.
Should be there. Well, that
So
artist has done something for each of 21 different political prisoners from around the world. So I'd be curious as to what more they have at the Art Center beside this piece, or if it's just this piece.
that is a great question. That can be your extra credit for next week. See if you can
There you go.
find any more art by Ai Weiwei at the Art Center.
I will have an answer unless they're closed
Excellent.
and they don't answer.
Okay, so that's what the email should look like every morning. And so again, if you want to do multiple items, you are welcome to, but the expectation is partly for your own learning, really, to kind of limit how much you try to take in. So don't feel like you have to go through everything, particularly if some of the content gets a little bit longer. You don't want to feel like you have to, okay, I have to find time in my day to handle all of this. Just focus in on what catches you that day. And it's really the process of learning over the course of 21 days that really should make the difference.
There was another video that followed the one Zoom one about don't touch my hair or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
That was a interesting one. I evidently it isn't part of this thing. It just was on the
YouTube. If you go to one video, there's often something following it as a suggestion. So there's a lot, particularly in African American culture about hair, but also in terms of the way that white people and African-American people interact, that there's sort of culturally a tendency for white people to just assume that they can touch black people's hair. And you can't, you're not allowed to. You wouldn't touch anybody else's hair, don't touch theirs either. But there's, because of the sort of historical context of those, the relationships between these two races, there's a lot of weight to remember in every situation that you don't own this person.
It's not a pet that you can pet their hair.
That's right.
So relate that to everybody wanting to touch a woman's belly if she's pregnant.
Yes. Yeah, don't do that either, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
don't even pet their dog without asking, but don't even
I know
ask.
That now.
That's right. Yeah. Don't pet somebody's dog and then fall off your chair. And there are some, you know, there are all of these sort of imbalances that are kind of built into, for historical reasons, they're built into race relations, in the United States. Which is important for us as white folks, and we happen to be all white folks on this particular conversation at the moment. It's kind of our job to learn the things that we need to know in order to approach race relations with a more sophisticated, gentler, a better way of interacting with folks. So that's part of what we're doing here with this equity challenge. Okay, I keep saying the word equity. Warren, you've taught business. When you say the word equity in your classes at DMAC, what did that mean at the time in that context?
Whoa, it's caught me off guard here. Without my teacher's cheat, I'm stumped. But to me, equity is that we all have a piece of the action, that it isn't some are without ownership and some have major chunks of it. Equity is equally distributed, be my definition.
That's pretty darn good.
But equity in your home is the amount of money you have built up that you have paid on your home versus the loan that you still owe. But
right.
I mean, that's another way of looking at equity.
That's right. And that's what I thought Warren was going to say from a business and accounting standpoint. But see, Warren knows too much about where we're going. So he got closer to the answer that we're going to land on than I thought the old business teacher would.
If you want to let me confuse the issue, I'll just tell you that in law, equity essentially means what's right in the circumstances, or you might call it natural law.
What's right in the circumstances. Yeah. And And I had a sort of some sense of, and not being a trained attorney, I don't know the particulars well enough to pick out the right definition from among the many. But yeah, I knew it had a technical definition in the law. It has a technical definition in accounting, which is what Sue gave us. So the value of your assets after you subtract the liabilities, right? So the amount that you, the fraction of your home that you own, if you're renting your house from the bank, then your house is worth something on the market, your mortgage is anti-worth something, and your equity in the house is the ownership stake that you have, which you can hear how all these definitions kind of fit together, right? Because that's almost what Warren was saying when he was actually getting a whole lot closer to the sort of what we mean in this context when we talk about social equity, is that, you know, everybody's got an appropriate piece of the pie. Everybody's got an appropriate stake in what happens in the community and appropriate ownership in the community. Sometimes that's economic. Sometimes that's judicial in the way that John described it, that the decisions that are made are fair, perhaps more fair than the laws themselves would look like they should be, which is to say sometimes the laws are not equitable. Warren got out his Merriam-Webster, so he's got the...
Yes. In addition to Sue's most accepted equity in your home, value of property over the debt, they've also got justness and impartiality in Merriam-Webster. That's it.
Impartiality.
Those three.
And justness. Yeah. And so when we're talking about equity in this social context, we're talking really about justness, about that idea that that everyone has gotten a fair shake kind of in all the different ways that a fair shake could happen. So we've got 20 different categories for talking about equity just over the course of this 21-day challenge. And then day 21 is, what are you going to do next? So I'm going to give us a quick little 4-minute video as well to talk to us about equity and equality, because that's the other sort of definition that we would tend to use for talking about equity. We have to talk about, what do we mean? How do we mean equity as distinct from equality, which is kind of the, you know, everybody, you know, if I have $7 in my pocket and I give each of you $1, that's equality, right? If I have the same number of dollars in my pocket, but I give more of them to John because now he's got medical bills caused by this dog, Now, that may actually be more equitable because it's a richer concept of what's fair. So how do we talk about that? What do we mean by that? That's what this quick little video is for. Equality is giving everyone a shoe, and equity is giving everyone a shoe that fits. So I do have to flag that I have recently-ish learned about some problems with that people watching the baseball game over the fence example, not in terms of how it makes sense of what equality and equity are and clarifies those two topics, but some of the other ways that people are depicted in that cartoon. So that's just me acknowledging that. That's not perfect, but it does help us think about the difference between just giving everybody the same thing and thinking about equity as making sure that people have what they need in order to succeed, right? depending on how we have kind of defined success, right? So it's kind of giving people what they need versus giving people the same things. So it's like, you know, the old line that we like to drag out about give a man a fish, feed him for a day, teach a man to fish, feed him for a lifetime. So equality is about giving everybody a fishing pole, right? Equity is also paying attention to who has time to fish, who lives in an area where the fishing hole is clean. And so the fish are actually, you know, good to eat. So what are the additional kind of layers that we have to look at so that we're not just being equal as a starting point, but we're also thinking about who's got access to what kinds of outcomes, right? So I want to just pause there and just sort of open up for any questions or responses that come to you when we talk about equity in that way.
Well, once again, I can't stand silence. Not to pick on any particular governmental unit, but I think we've seen this especially abused or demonstrated, that one rule will not apply to 50 states, 330 million, when you've got so many variables. And I know, I'll also compliment them. I think as they have more of the decision-making at a lower level, some of this is being reduced, but I think there's where it's just obvious to any citizen. You have surely, at our age, encountered some bureaucratic red tape that you just can't understand how in the world they would expect you to jump through these hoops. But in somebody's mind, that was appropriate procedure, you know.
Economists will tell you that if you give 100 people 40 acres and a mule each, the same person is going to end up owning almost all the land and almost all the mules, inevitably. Mm. Then you start to look at the reasons, and maybe that's where we get back to equity. But that's a place where equality is a meaningless concept.
Well, John, didn't the Jewish elders have the 50-year jubilee? As economists, to redistribute it back, they must have thought in 50 years, you had the haves and the have-nots, and then you get them back to being equal. Maybe that's what you're referring to. In 50 years, they have the jubilee.
That sounds like a good point, but I'm neither Jewish nor elder, so I'm not sure I can speak to that.
Well, yep. I'm just saying there's others that are thinking that way, that it will end up, even though they add the 40 acres and the mule, somebody will have all the land and all the mules.
And well, you're throwing in a should. And I'm just saying statistically that's what will happen. And then we need to look for the reasons.
I don't think I said that should happen. I think I'm saying that it has been proven to happen.
So I think you're agreeing that the trend toward inequality tends to happen. So Warren, you're citing somebody else's should, but the should of having that jubilee kind of reset, redistributing. Yeah. Russ, go ahead.
If I'm correct about Old Testament history, I don't think jubilee ever happened. It was always postponed.
Yeah, funny how that works, isn't it?
Yeah.
Great theory.
The should I was talking about, Warren, is that if you're going to have jubilee, which I actually thought was 7 years, but maybe it's 50, that's because it should be redistributed, and because God wanted it that way.
Yeah. So and you're actually both right, 7 and 50. So every 7 years, what is it? Every 7 years, slaves would be freed, debts would be canceled. every 50 years, any land that had been sold would be returned to the original family. And that's really put there in order to preserve equity on a sort of a cultural or a society-wide level, because understanding that even if you get the starting line as even as you can make it, human systems have a tendency to pull themselves sort of, you know, money is kind of gravitational. Even in a sort of a pre-money economy, the more wealth you have, the more you tend to be able to collect. And the authors of Leviticus and Deuteronomy said that's not the way it's supposed to be. That's not the way God actually intended our economic life to be. It is. It's both 7 and 50, depending on which kind of debt you're talking about. And John, you also mentioned the 40 acres and a mule, which I've been doing kind of just other historical reading prior to this. I haven't dipped into the racism piece on the 21-day challenge, but that 40 acres and a mule, that language came from General Sherman. He said, as he was burning his path to the sea between Atlanta and Savannah, he had the idea of, okay, there's, it probably wasn't originally his idea, but the idea that at least was floated was to take all of these giant plantations, right, where Black people had been enslaved and forced to work with no opportunity to participate in the outcome or autonomy over them, their own selves, to break those up, give every Black family 40 acres and a mule, and let them start as farmers. They know how to farm. They just need the capital to make it happen. That never happened. That wasn't done for these freed slaves. The enslavers got reparations. They got damages for the loss of the people that they called property. But the people who had been previously called property got bupkis. So when we look at equality, particularly through the lens of race, when we look at equity, I have to use my words right. When we look at equity through the lens of race, we have to remember that it's only been 160 years, 155 years since universally African Americans in the United States have had their, you know, right to their own person. And so even from that starting point, to talk about equity you have to remember that this was not an even starting line, even at the beginning. Even if the beginning was only 155 years ago, it was 401 years ago that the first enslaved African was brought to the continent of North America. And since then, and you're going to see this play out in the in several of the materials that we'll see, I'm just sure of it. You're going to see the way that laws have been written, the way that mortgages have been written, the way that that schooling has been administered. You're going to see all of these ways that, if you want to think about it as starting lines, the starting lines have been differentially placed, and to be sure, the range of possible outcomes has been different. I just kind of set that there because, you know, 40 acres and a mule is a great sort of rhetorical illustration of everybody starts at the same place, and even that didn't happen. So that's just, that's all kind of there when we talk about equity. Warren, I don't know that I have ever heard somebody start with the concept of equity and get from there to the principle of local control in government. I think that's fabulous. That's just fantastic.
I may not be a educated person, but I've acquired a lot of wisdom in 77 years of living in central Iowa. You know, some of those lessons, like I say, are I was taught whether I wanted to receive them or not.
That's right. Yeah, and it is, you know, there are plenty of good stories about how what looks like it should be a perfectly even way to do things, you know, because it's on a form, right? Bureaucracy loves forms. Mm-hmm. And you make a really good form, and as soon as you've done that, you've prescribed how this is able to work, which may not work for everybody. And that's just a really, that's a great just application of that same principle. The same thing is actually built into things like, well, you saw the little cartoon in the video about, you know, for fairness for you know, this hiring process, everybody has the same test. You have to go climb that tree. Mm-hmm. You know, and of course the monkey's going to do a better job at that than anybody else.
Goldfish.
Yeah, the goldfish is not getting that job, is it?
No, it's not either.
The elephant's not either, no. So there's, you know, one of the places that I imagine we'll notice when we talk about education is standardized testing. And the ways that standardized testing really enshrines some of these inequities, both in the way the tests are designed, in the ways in the materials that the tests test, and frankly, in the mismatch between what the tests assess and how well people actually do in college, which you would think that that would be the thing the test is supposed to tell you. Turns out it does a terrible job of that too. So even in terms of admissions into an area where equity has been a problem for a very long time, they don't even do that well. So you're going to see things like that, but there, you know, that's a form, right? We've got this great form. It's all standardized. Everybody takes the same test. Some people do well, some people don't. What can you do? Turns out there is something you can do, which is not to say that any of you work for the ACT and are in a position to redesign that, but we are all in areas of influence, depending on where we are, even if our influence is secondhand, and we want to, you know, talk to somebody going through a hiring process and say, "Hey, why does the person applying for this job need a college degree? Is this a job that really requires a college degree?" Because college attainment is not a site of equity. And so, you know, if you've got your, you know, got the ear of somebody who's writing a job description for something, you know, have this conversation just, you know, while you're sitting around chatting at some point, and see what seeds sprout in their minds. So there are going to be lots of different angles for talking about equity. Which is why we've got 21 days to do it. I want to just kind of touch as well on, you know, kind of what do we need from each other in order to have conversations about equity. talking about, you know, because equity has the word fairness kind of built into it. We really like to think of ourselves as fair-minded, clear-headed. I wouldn't discriminate against somebody, kind of people. Which can make, in my experience, conversations about equity a little bit emotionally challenging, because it requires me to notice things about myself as a person with excess privilege that I may not like noticing, not just in terms of sort of my thoughts and my attitudes, but also kind of my sense of, you know, how accomplished I am. How the world around me is shaped, you know, is my world that I have right now, is that fair? So I wanna just sort of invite us to sort of recognize that this in unique ways needs to be a safe conversation for us, so that we feel like we can really sort of be, you know, safe in this space, even as we do things that may be uncomfortable. So what do we need from each other so that we can trust this conversation? What would help in order to trust this conversation?
I would think just not saying to somebody else who wasn't here, oh, you should have heard so-and-so last night. But just a common politeness that we would listen to each other's belief system, and we're sharing something that is personal to each of us, how we look upon our world and the people around us, that we be safe, that we not break a confidence, and it will be somewhat of a confidence if they go as far as I expect them to in this 21 days.
So I have a question specifically around that, because I think that is an important piece that if we're going to be vulnerable with each other about, you know, here's what I heard, here's what I experienced, that I know that then, Deb, you're not gonna, you know, go into the next room and tell Perry, oh my gosh, you would not believe what Nathan said and how he thinks about this thing, right? Yeah. We have been in the habit of recording contemporary issues and sharing it as a podcast. And now that we are also on video, we're posting a video for those folks who aren't with us.
Well, then we solved that problem.
Well, the question is, would y'all prefer that we not share that recording so that we have this space where we can really kind of know that the things that we're saying are held with the group of those of us who are here?
What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, huh?
That would be the idea, yeah.
Las Vegas is a whole different topic than contemporary issues. Yeah, that's an apple of the...
Well, now let's check and see what day we talk about Vegas.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Warren.
One of the advantages of a class like this is I have known some of these people almost 40 years. I don't have any other group or organization that I have participated for that length of time. So I personally, you can record it, you know, I don't care, because I think they know Warren, and if they disagree with Warren, I don't have any objection if they come to me and take issue with it. But only because I have known some of these people for so many years. Put me in a different group that maybe I've only been 2 or 3 years, completely different in terms of me picking my words or refraining from commenting So to me, I'll just say I don't have any objection to it being recorded. But if others do, I understand that. But once again, I'm just, I don't have any other group that I have had 40 years continuous membership.
And with the recording, I've got different options. I can take the recording and share that just with, you know, with other folks who would have been here, except they're just not right now. So other members of this group that we have this trust with, I can post it in a public way where people would be able to, oh, I'm interested in Covenant, would like to learn more about them. Mm-hmm. Oh, look, here's their class. So I wanna be mindful of that distinction too, when we're talking about comfort levels. And I can do, so I've got the option of no longer making a recording available, making a recording available just to other members of the group, making a recording available publicly. These things don't get a lot of views, but they exist. So I could go any of those levels.
I watched last week's this morning with over breakfast, and then knew what to get into. So I mean, if I miss a week, I would like to be able to watch it and see what you know what it was about. That's my opinion. I don't care what anyone hears me say. I don't say anything profound. So it's
you might.
Oh, not me.
I don't have any objections either. I just think everybody respects everybody else's opinions or
And I hope to learn something. So if I say something that I feel unprepared for or that might look foolish to me down the road, that means I'm learning something. So I'm okay with that too.
There are some subjects in the area of race relations, but really more in the area of acculturation, that if I said in some crowds, I know I would just be asking for a fight. Whether really or just somebody who wants to argue because they got nothing better to do. But I'll take that chance. Go ahead and record it as far as I'm concerned. And release it.
Okay. The thing that you said too, John, about, you may say something that, that could be argued with, could be even, you know, emotionally pushed back against. I would also hope that things like that could be safe in a conversation like this. And, you know, a lot of those are real-time sorts of things that, but to be able to put something out there that that maybe it needs to be shot down, but it needs to be shot down in a way that you feel comfortable having put it out there as well. What do you, what if anything would you want or need in order to know that you can sort of, you can put something out there that you're not quite sure how to say, as Deb said, you know, something that, oh, you know, I kind of want to look back on this and be amazed I ever thought that or impressed at how much I learned. What would help make this safe for that too?
I'm so used to saying things in public in the sense that at least in law, you can't take things back and you can't say only tell so-and-so and make it stick. So I, in my brain, I'm used to filtering those things. And if I make a mistake, I'm still thinking the value of this group is kind of what you said, that it's in getting feedback. And it might surprise some of you to know that once in a while, I'll say something just to be devil's advocate and stir things up.
Warren did not see that coming.
I mean, if you've ever been around John, that is 100% accurate statement. Witness that a lot.
The fun is in knowing whether or not I was say something in jest or hypothetically, or whether I really meant it. Then you got to ask me that question.
So I also want to ask the question. So I started with asking the question of, you know, what do we need from each other in order to be able to trust this conversation? And then John is actually kind of bringing us over to the other piece of this too. So we've talked about, you know, kind of keeping this conversation within itself, even though we're going to make it accessible to others for kind of thinking along with us, but to keep this conversation within us and to respect the other opinions that are offered here. And then John's talking too about the work of putting other thoughts out there, putting our thoughts out there if we're either to prompt conversation, to try on a position. What else do we want from ourselves in order to enter into this conversation well?
I'd like to know that if I say something, the people in the audience will at least try to give it a fair shake, whatever that means, maybe not instantly react, or especially that they would ask me what I mean before reacting if they think there's some possibility I might not be saying what I think I'm saying.
So to listen for understanding rather than just to react, and to ask for clarification if you think you don't understand,
yes.
Or if you, even if you think you do understand, but you don't think that that could be something that that person would think.
Yes.
Yeah. Good.
In other words, don't act like you're on Twitter.
That's right. What else do we want from ourselves?
I would just like to right up front, you know, if I say something, and John kind of referred to this, that should for whatever reason offend any in the group, it certainly isn't intentional. I don't operate that way, but it can happen. And rather than you take it and let it simmer and upset you, please indicate to me at any time if I've really, you know, upset you, because I won't pick up on it maybe. I'm not that sharp. My radar isn't that sharp. And for heaven's sakes, we, like I say, we know each other well enough that if I do offend, or if any of us do offend, I'm sure as a group, it's not intentional. We don't operate that way. But it could happen, and please don't let it go unrectified.
Well, if we happen to offend unintentionally, you know, and then others, you know, ask you, it's a learning experience. So you're thinking, oh, I hadn't thought of that, or but that would come across this way.
Yeah, that's a really powerful set of commitments there. The one as I really like the way you articulated it, Pam, as a learning experience. If we get called out for saying something that that was offensive, there's a whole layer of sort of white American culture that that never wants to have given offense, and you know, it can be so that there's a lot of, and this is a cultural thing, this is not even necessarily something that we individually decide, but that the idea that if somebody is upset at something I said, then I should get a pass because I didn't mean it. And what you're both offering is we can say things that are offensive or hurtful without meaning it. And so the question of whether I meant to offend is actually off the table. And the way that Warren invites us to take that off the table is to assume I didn't mean to offend, but call me when I do offend. And I think that that's a really powerful commitment to live out as a community. Warren.
Well, the intention, well, it's like confession. I sometimes miss the obvious, and I've said things or done things that when somebody confronted me about it, I was taken aback. You know, I had no idea that I was that ignorant, if you will. So to spare me causing anybody any grief, you're doing me a favor to bring it to my attention that something I did or said caused that and given me, you know, the hit upside the head opportunity to, as Pam indicated, learn something and improve. I feel in 2020, I am so out of sync with a majority of the people. I know that comes with age, but I'm really, you know, trying to look around and think, am I really this oddball? Or not that I want to be in the latest craze and the latest movement. I got to kind of, you know, this is who I am. I can't, but I need to maybe be a little more flexible and exposure to ideas. And here's the other thing, the fact that I've known these people, you know, I take more stock on what I hear from Russ Marshall than what I hear from somebody that maybe I've only known a year in Kiwanis Club. See, he's had opportunity to demonstrate. Now, Nathan, you're working on it. You've been with us several years now. But like I say, I and poor Claudia, she knows I miss the obvious. And I'm almost embarrassed at times. Well, why didn't I pick up on that? Or why am I so out of what's going on in 2020? So, no.
The question that we're pussyfooting around is whether we have an obligation to never offend anybody. And that, if it's not another whole week's topic, it ought to be.
Yeah, and there's offense and then there's offense too. Because there's the difficulty of having honest conversations, and then there are the way that some of the language that we have been brought up using is not only offensive but really really hurtful to people, and. Yeah, boy, it's a really fuzzy gray area too. It's not, there's not a clear line. And there may be contexts in which we do need to say, you know, this is not going to sit well with whoever I'm saying it to, but I need to say it. And there are, but we also need to be able to hear, okay, did I mean to have this sit in the way that it did? Did I mean to have this land in the way that it did? And if so, why did I mean that?
If I'm going to be true to myself, I have to be able to say what I'm thinking. But that doesn't mean that I have to say something knowing that it's going to be offensive. But I get to make that choice.
Right.
There. How's that for a starter if you want to argue about something?
Yeah.
My daughter often corrects me on the ethnicity, the proper words to call different, you know, like I used to always use Oriental. Well, that's not appropriate anymore. Or to, you know, it used to be Negroes. Well, that's not the appropriate one, but is African American or is it Black? What are you don't call them Mexicans, you call them Hispanics. I mean, she's always getting after me to use the proper current terms for people. I think that's something that it, evidently it's offensive. It's offensive to her when I use the wrong term, and I guess it would be offensive to people of that ethnicity.
But it's their choice to take offense or not.
Yeah, but even my white daughter thinks it's offensive because I'm not using the current terms, and I've had to rethink all these terms to try and say the right, use the right term for these, for people.
Oh, I yeah. do too, but and I'm not going to shame myself if I accidentally say something that is not au courant.
Right. And as you say, you know, it's you know, people have some agency in whether they're going to take offense to a particular term used in a particular context, situation, and relationship. But you did also say, if I know that something is going to be offensive to someone and I choose to use that word that I know will be offensive, I made that choice. So it's complicated in the sense that we may not realize in a first instance, oh, that's a word that actually doesn't sit well with the people I'm talking to or about. You know, we can make that mistake, but it's sort of it's a fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. If I do it and didn't realize it and learn from that, that's great. If I do it and did realize it, you know, I'm almost talking myself back into intent, right? Because intent, my lack of ill intent doesn't give me a pass. But the presence of ill intent sure doesn't get me out of anything. So if I am meaning to say something that I know is offensive, then that has relational consequences in relationships with the folks that we may be talking to or about. And here, if we're talking about racial equity in this, you know, this group is almost always entirely white. So when we talk about racial equity, we're going to stumble onto words that, oh, actually members of that community don't think that we should use that word. To try to present that as a learning opportunity. Some of it is, it's a little bit like the ownership thing that we touched on way back at the beginning of the conversation, that, who owns that word? Who should get to decide what this person or group's identity is?
Here's something you could, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
Here's something you could chew on, partly because I don't have an answer yet. Actually, I have two answers at least. Recently, the New York Times decided that if you write the word black, meaning someone of African descent, and yes, we can exclude people from North Africa and whatever, but meaning people of a black color, you've got to capitalize it. Now that, of course, isn't the way I learned it, which does matter to me, but I know someday I'm going to write something and not capitalize black, whether I think about it or not, and somebody's going to be offended. And I don't think, and if I know I'm going to unmake their day, probably I shouldn't do it unless I'm making a point. But right in this group, I'm making a point that I'm not sure whether they have the right to tell me. They can be capital B black, but I can't be capital W white or capital O Oriental. I don't know who's right there, but I don't, that's the kind of thing where I'm saying, I don't think we have to go around every day trying not to offend everybody.
This is kind of a corollary on the old saying that begins, a rose by any other name It raises the question, okay, what is the proper name for the rose today?
Yeah, and there's, okay, so there is sort of a recognized difficulty with keeping up with sort of terminology and being really rigid in terms of you are either using the right words or the wrong words. In my experience, is also not particularly helpful. I would hope that we would be able to, when, you know, whether it's a language question or something else, when a question comes up that, that we need to say, oh, actually, that's not how we would say that, or members of this community would prefer that you not say that, that we also give that the benefit of the doubt. And so to, I mean, this sort of goes back to the assuming positive intent too, that, so John, if you want to say something that you intend to be offensive, we need you to flag that for us, because otherwise we will assume that you mean something neutral or positive by it.
Yes.
And I would agree
generally. I'm talking about situations where either I don't know how somebody's going to take it, and they may or may not have any right to take it that way, but more to the point, I just don't care. And that's my black and white in a written paragraph. Somebody's going to get mad at me about that. Either way, I know at least one of my daughters is going to be going to rake me over the coals if I don't use a capital B, if I write her a note that says, I went to a rally and most everybody there was black. If I don't capitalize B, she's going to jump me. And I don't think that's fair either.
I think if the characterization of being jumped for it is, I would not think that we need to jump each other for saying things in ways that we disagree with.
Not here. I'm talking about right. Out in the real world.
I think I'm hearing your sense of I don't know, maybe frustration with trying to keep up with what's supposed to be right and feeling like language is becoming fraught in a way that that you would rather language be more robust than that.
That's true for language, but I'm talking in a much bigger sense.
Yeah.
Of just, like I said, pussyfooting around, hoping somebody doesn't get offended by the way I combed my hair or whether I have the right clothes on or whether, and go all the way to whether I'm of the right ethnicity. And there's no answer. But yes, you are sensing a frustration with the idea that I have to become somebody that is not me. And that's going to happen to all of us sooner or later. I'm not making a point for or against anything except that this can be tricky. And as you're saying, we have to think about it and mind our audience.
Yeah, and there are pieces in there that there are pieces of what you just said that make me uncomfortable in sort of my moderator's chair, mm-hmm. wanting to sort of hold, make sure that the conversation is indeed kind of safe for lots of different ears. At the same time, I want you to be able to sort of express where you're coming from. So I want to honor the frustration piece of what you're sitting with, and the difficulty of talking about, particularly when we talk about race, that it is difficult to talk about race in ways that that are sort of universally or widely anyway recognized as, yeah, we've done that well. And and we're going to screw up. And that is going to have to be an okay piece, and we're going to need to be okay with screwing up. So Deb, I see you unmuted. I want to let you in here.
One of the questions that they asked on the journal page that is attachment when you open up the email was, is race science-based or a social construct? And my answer was, it should be science-based, but it's a social construct. And that goes back to, John, what you're kind of saying you get frustrated with is, you look at a person and you know they're Black, but which word do we call them this decade? Because it changes. And Proud Boys 2 days ago was a white supremacist group, but as of today, it's gay men. They took it over and they did it on purpose and it worked. Yeah. And it's funny.
I read that on the net and I wasn't sure whether they were serious or not, but yes, I know
it's
what
serious.
You're talking about.
They knew what they wanted to do and they did it. So if you say Proud Boys, what you say today isn't the same as what 48 hours ago it meant.
But
so
Deb,
those kinds of things happen. I'm not sure when Oriental became offensive, but boy, it sure is in my generation. My parents used that term continuously until we kept saying, please don't, please don't, please don't. And they don't anymore. And they now tell their friends to knock it off.
But Deb, you and Nathan are doing exactly what you're doing exactly what I suggested. I said, here's something for you to chew on, not to decide, not to formulate black letter policy on, but something to chew on as the kind of things we have to think about. You're both doing that. Thank you.
Okay.
When I was in high school, I went to North and it was quite a mixed group of people, and the N word was not considered bad at that time. It was used by both Black and white, and it finally progressed into more Negro, but now the N-word is just totally offensive. But in the 60s, early 60s, it was not, if it was offensive, we didn't know about it, let's put it that way.
And yeah. If you're American, you can use the word openly. So if you're Black, it's okay to use the word. If you're white, you should not touch that word.
No, you
but
should.
If you're Black and you're with a group of Black people, go ahead and use it. So every racial group has names that are okay for them to use, but not people of other races.
Well,
there's a lot of tricky rules in all this, and I hope we learn about some of them.
There was
what
the twist. In the twist, then, and the end twist, that was, without saying the word, that was what it was called. And, that was just the general term. And, of course, that's very offensive now, but back then it didn't seem to be.
And you phrased that in a really interesting way, the first time through that, Sue, that if it was offensive, we didn't know it. And that, I think, is a piece of what this sort of constant evolution of language is doing, is we white people, and pay attention when you say the word we and figure out what you mean when you say we, because
I didn't know it didn't include the Black people
right.
at the time. I said we, but it probably was we, just white,
So pay attention to what you mean when you say we, and particularly for us as white people, because whiteness has been so dominant, in terms of sort of cultural norms and in terms of obviously economics and law and so many things, that pay attention to what you mean when you say we, because it's not necessarily including everyone. So just be mindful of that too, because I think that actually helps with, it helps me anyway. I won't tell you whether it should help you, but it does help me to remember why it is that some of this language seems so slippery, and seems like I'm pursuing language that I didn't know I needed to find, because who we are has often been very, very constricted. Anne, did you want to get in?
Oh, I just wanted to say my mother was 92 years old and she used the term colored, and I entertained the Cottage Grove Choir in my home, and we had two men that were black, and she would use the term with them, and I would just cringe, and, you know, I didn't want to correct her at the time, but, you know, she used it for 92 years, and it's hard to, she didn't mean anything. She didn't know the difference.
My grandfather used that term, which I thought was offensive at the time when I was kind of young, and they were commonly called Negroes, and he always referred to them as colored people. And I was like,
well, the NAACP, I guess these days, is referred to only by the initials, but what the C stands for.
That's right.
Still there.
Right, yeah.
And when your mother used that term in the presence of these black people, did they react visibly or otherwise?
Not that I could tell. And I don't know that she spoke directly to them or if they could hear it, but it just, you know.
There was a time, and we're talking about the NAACP, when that was the preferred term instead of saying the Negroes or the Niggers.
Right, right.
There was a time that was the polite term.
Yeah.
So, but I have a question.
And they have changed the name for what, traditional purposes, I guess. So that's why it's still there.
Have any of you ever worked with Rudy Sims? Okay, I think you'd remember. He was the head of the local branch of the National Association, or no, the NCCJ, National Conference of Christians and Jews. And Nathan, you might have, because you grew up in a family that was related to community issues and understanding these problems. It then became the National Conference for Community and Justice, because somebody got bit because Jews was used in it. Yeah. And that, since that person was a big sponsor, they acceded to that. But my point is this, if none of you ever have or has, whichever is right in English, I would be open to trying to get either Rudy, who has retired, but was the world's greatest presenter on Honest Conversations. He was the world's greatest, I'm sure. Or one of his disciples, who is a good friend of mine, to talk with us. Or we can keep this just us. But if somebody wanted that kind of input, because he would have erudite and thoughtful answers to all of these questions we're raising.
Let's sit with that possibility. And, as we go through these conversations over this sort of this next 4 weeks, we might find that, we keep running up sort of against the same conversation problems, or it tickles something in our mind that we say, I really do want to have somebody who knows how to facilitate these difficult conversations, to be able to speak to us. So thank you, John, for offering that.
Yeah.
I do want to honor, sometimes we say honor the hour. We don't have an hour because I don't have to go to worship right after this, which thank you for accommodating a Monday evening meeting time instead. But we are going to have this conversation again next week. And based on what you interact with in this first week of the 21-Day Equity Challenge, we will make sure that the link for signing up for the Equity Challenge is in the Covenant Corner again tomorrow. I'm going to put it in the chat here really quick in case anybody wants to just click right on it right now on your favorite computing device to sign up for getting those emails every morning. And as you engage with the material from this week, if there's something that you're watching or listening to or reading or doing that you think, oh, this is the thing I really hope we talk about, give me a shout, because we can sort of customize what we engage with based on what you find most engaging and most compelling. Otherwise, I choose, and you don't necessarily want that. So, so let me know if there's anything that as you're reading and listening and watching this week that you think, I really would love to hear what everybody else thinks about this, and we can focus in on that. So, sound good? All right, everybody. I'll see you next Monday.
Thank you for listening. Learn more about our mission at wdmcovenant.org.